to truly believe in the magic.
What's up, Magic fans? Welcome to Let's Talk Magic, an Orlando Magic podcast. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, you will see that we're all smiles this week. Obviously, and you know, after last Sunday's win against the Milwaukee Bucks, we know that the Magic have qualified for the playoffs whilst avoiding the play-in. So we can all watch these next couple of games this week without a stress in the world. So today we're going to be joined by a very special guest, Magic superfan Hank Waters, who's going to be joining us shortly. But before we get into speaking to Hank, gentlemen, how are we? Gary?
Anything big happened this week? Anything big going on? Why are we so happy?
Oh, you tell me, mate. You tell me.
It's almost like there's a massive light shining on Orlando Magic fandom and social media. We weren't even there, but it was something else just following people on Instagram stories and Twitter, as it will always be. Great to see. Jealous we weren't there. I got a message off friend of the show, Cortez, saying you should be here right now. And I was like, yeah, I absolutely should, but I'm not, sadly.
Yeah. I know you mean. But you know, you were on Twitter, you know, for hours afterwards, just sort of reading what people had to say, seeing the reactions downtown. It was fantastic to see. Paul, you still on cloud nine?
Not really fussed.
Liar.
Right. To compound things, not only are we in the playoffs and I'm absolutely amazing. Oh, so good. So good. Sunday was brilliant. But you know how Facebook does that thing to you every so often where it just goes, and here's something to just take your legs. 5 years ago today, I was flying out to Orlando for the playoffs.
Oh, mate.
That sort of took the little bit of the edge off today. I just say, oh, thanks for that. But my missus says, doesn't seem like it's 5 years ago, does it? I thought, oh, you look at some of the teams we've been watching in the intervening period. Yeah, it does actually.
I'll be getting that notification probably tomorrow or something. So,
yeah, you were the day after, weren't you?
Yeah, the day after.
I flew out on the game on the day of game two, and got to watch it with two Raptors fans in Disney Boardwalk in the old ESPN bar thing that was there. Yeah.
There's a moral. The moral message here, boys: don't have Facebook.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Good call. It was a bit of a kick in the spuds that one today was. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Right then, we got Hank ready. So without further ado, we'll get into the interview with Hank. And today we're delighted to be joined by what I can only describe as a Magic superfan. We see him next to the Magic bench at home games and more often than not on the floor seats whilst we're on the road. Mr. Hank Waters, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. Anytime. So I've got to kick this off and ask you about your Magic fandom there, Hank. How long have you been a Magic fan? And, you know, how'd you manage to get probably the best seats in the house?
Well, I've been a basketball fan my whole life, but I came to the Magic probably about 11 years ago when I moved to Florida. I'd grown up a Celtics fan, and then once I moved to Florida and started going to the Magic games, pretty quickly converted a Magic fan. And just over the years, the first year I had seats that were kind of second row in what we call the ultimate seats, the permanent seats there at the arena. And then after that, I was able to move to the floor seats on the end line. And then when COVID happened, kind of had a shakeup with the ticket holders. Some people dropped off and I was able to jump on the two seats that I sit in now right beside the Magic bench. I've had those since COVID.
And I can't imagine you're going to give them up anytime soon.
If I give them up, you'll know I'm either dead or I went broke.
Yeah, they are amazing seats. They are amazing seats. You have some phenomenal interactions with the players, it would appear. But I want to ask you, because you have been blessed with the opportunity to witness so much of this Magic season up close and personal. And as we look at our best season record in many a year, what would you describe as to where you believe this team is in terms of competitiveness, consistency, and their development?
Well, I think we're in a great spot, and we're only at the very beginning, I think. I think this team is going to get considerably better over the next 3 years because everybody wants to win, and our fans want that also. But a lot of people seem to be losing track of the fact that Paolo and Franz and Jalen Suggs are really, really young. That really, Jalen and Paolo should both still be in college. Franz, this should be his first year out of college. So they're really young. They're going to continue to develop. I think the potential is off the charts. I think the one thing that you mentioned that's an issue for us is consistency. And that, I believe, is strictly because of how young the players are. Some nights, they always bring it. But some nights, they have more difficulty than others. And I think as the years go on, these next 2 to 3 years, that'll kind of disappear and we'll be very consistent in addition to be very talented and extremely well-coached. I think we have the best coach in basketball. I think he's amazing, especially with this group of players. One thing I am blessed with is the ability to see the interaction in the huddle during the game as he's coaching from the sideline. And Coach Mosley's just amazing. He's the right guy for this team. The players love him. So I think, you know, as he continues to grow with the team, because again, it's only his third year as a head coach, he's got room to grow too. The players have room to grow. They seem to get along so well together as a team unit. It's really a pleasure to be a fan of theirs.
This is kind of something we were talking about last week, that with the slight difficulty, shall we put it, that we had in the latter couple of weeks of the season, it almost felt like that slump disguised just how well this team has done this season.
Yeah, I think there were some people, you know, some fans really disappointed in the stretch, probably mostly because we lost to Charlotte. If you win Charlotte in the middle of those other losses, you know, it doesn't seem so bad. But the loss to Charlotte is tough. But what we all forget, including me, is that the other players on the other teams, even the teams that don't have great records, they're really good players. And Brandon Miller was just unconscious in the first half of that game. It wasn't even really that we played that poorly, but, you know, he just had an amazing game. And we lost a game that all the fans and the players really thought we were going to win and we should have won. So I think some people got a little discouraged, and that was kind of a bad taste in their mouth. I don't, you know, Philadelphia, that's a really good team when Joel Embiid is playing. Milwaukee, good team even without Giannis. So those losses didn't really shock me, but they're always disappointing. But the season as a whole, again, a very, very young team that can beat anybody. I mean, we won road games against Denver went down by 18 in the third, against Minnesota when they were full health, against New Orleans just a week or so ago. Those are really, really good teams that we beat on the road. We can beat anybody at home. So it's an exciting time to be a Magic fan, and we just have to roll through, you know, a loss here and there. That's going to happen. I mean, a great NBA season includes 20 losses, a great season. So you've got to be able to move forward from the losses and regroup.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned there about Jamal Mosley, Hank, but what are your favorite things about the current team and also your favorite players?
Well, my favorite thing about the team is how well they get along together. And again, I love the coach. I think his interaction with them, his encouragement, holding them responsible. He's a great guy. And you can tell that players on other teams love him as well from his time as an assistant in Dallas and before then. I think he just has the respect and the admiration of the players. A lot of coaches demand respect, but that doesn't mean you necessarily like them. He seems to have both of those things going for him. They really respect him, listen to him, and I think they really like him as well. On the team, well, my favorite player is Cole Anthony because he played, well, for one of the reasons he played at UNC, and I love UNC. But also, I love his energy on the court, and for the last 3 years since of having those seats, seeing the way he encourages all the other players at the beginning of every huddle, because you've probably noticed this. When they have the huddle, the first minute or so is just the players, and the coaches are out on the court talking to each other. Cole, especially the last 2 years, was invariably kind of the leader in that group when they were waiting on the coach to come over and, you know, have his huddle, encouraging everybody, talking to every single player, pumping everybody up. So I love Cole Anthony. I love the way Jalen Suggs plays basketball. I call him Warrior when he comes to the bench because he is just all out there, playing as hard as he can, diving for loose balls, playing great defense. Paolo is way better than I thought he was going to be. He's not really the player I thought we were going to draft because I do not like Duke, so it took me a little bit of time to But after watching him and Wendell Carter, I'm starting to I still don't like Duke, but I can now like former Duke players at least. But Paolo is – we're very, very fortunate to have Paolo. He is – you know, a lot of people talk about one of his favorite players is Carmelo Anthony. I firmly believe he's already better than Carmelo Anthony was in his prime. Paolo is a great passer in addition to the scoring and rebounding. And an energetic and active defender who will get better at that as time goes on. But I think Paolo is a tremendous player. And I think our most underrated player is Franz. I think Franz is going to be a superstar. He can get to the basket whenever he wants. He's not afraid of anybody. His three-point shot was a little inconsistent this year, but I think that'll continue to improve over time. He's a good defender. So I love Franz, but I would go through the whole team. I love everybody on the team. I love Bo's energy when he comes off the bench. He's an exceptional offensive center and a very hard defender who gives you max effort. Markel Fultz, I love Markel. Markel's had a rough year on the court at times, but he's very important to the team. A very good defender, very good at getting everybody involved in the game on offense, and has become a really good mid-range scorer. But I love Markel. Who am I leaving out? Oh, Jonathan Isaac. Watching Jonathan Isaac play defense is just a pleasure. He is as good a defender as I have ever seen in person at any position. In the game that we really needed against Milwaukee, he was guarding Lillard a lot of the time. And Lillard had no luck against him. No luck against him. At the same time, he guarded Wembanyama when we were in San Antonio. He guards the bigs. He shut down. When in Minnesota, we were behind, and he came in and he started guarding Karl Anthony Towns, and Towns did nothing from that moment forward and looked like he was just totally frustrated and out of the game. I think people just aren't used to playing against a guy who's as good defensively as Jonathan Isaac is. And this season he's become, you know, I won't call him a consistent three-point shooter, but they have to worry about him hitting the three-point shot. He's great at follow-ups. He's a good rebounder. So another really good player. I'm very excited about Anthony Black. When he got minutes this year, he was very good. Shows a lot of potential, especially on the defensive end. And just a really, really nice guy. I haven't met Anthony Black's parents in person, but I'd love to tell him just how nice he is, how respectful he is, how pleasant he is, how good he is with all the younger fans. He just seems like a great, great guy. I feel like I'm going to leave somebody out here.
That's awesome. Can I just jump in?
Yeah.
Something
I
want to follow up on. First of all, Hank, your favorite player in Cole had Gary and I nodding because we will both tell you our favorite player is Cole. We absolutely love the spirit that man brings to the team. He is such a heart of that team. But one thing I just wanted to jump in on was you talking about watching the huddle and listening to the huddle. It would appear from certain things that we hear and then certain things that you see as they're being covered, it's as if there's no hierarchy in the team as far as who can speak. Everybody's allowed to express an opinion, and if they've got something to say, it's welcomed.
That's very accurate. I would say that and all the players seem to listen to each other, but they, and I left them out, they really listen to Joe Ingles. Yeah. Joe Ingles is as responsible for our, you know, 12 or 13 game increase in wins, whatever it ended up being, as any player. They absolutely listen to him, seek out his counsel. He gives the coach great input during the game. Joe's been amazing, but you're right. Like Admiral doesn't play a lot, but when Admiral says something to the team, they listen. Cole is always trying to pump everybody up. Mo, same way. Mo is always trying to pump everybody up. Some of the players are more quiet than others. You don't really hear Gary say much. I left him out earlier. I love Gary Harris, too. He's a much better defender than people give him credit for. He's hit a lot of big shots for us this year. And just another really good guy. But, yeah, anybody can talk in the huddle before the coach gets over and when the coach is there. You know, coach can be drawing up a play, and any player can interject and say, oh, yeah, and also, you know, we've noticed this. This is how they handle the pick and roll or whatever. And coaches always listen. Now, he doesn't necessarily always agree and go with what they say, but everybody, it's very clear that everybody's allowed to give input at pretty much any time. And I think that's also beneficial because a few games this year on the road, I've sat beside the opposing bench, like in Phoenix and in Denver, and it's not that way there. It's like being in the office with your principal during the huddle. You're sitting there being quiet, just, you know, no, even Durant. I never saw Durant talk back to the coach, or not even talk back, but offer insight. They were just, a lot of times they look like they're just sitting there waiting for the coach to finally shut up so they can go play basketball. Our huddles are totally different. Everybody's engaged. Everybody's listening. And I think, again, that's credit both to the character of our players and to just how good a coach Coach Mosley is.
Yeah. Brilliant. Just to add on to that, the other two were smiling like Cheshire Cats when you said Cole was your favourite player. My favourite player did get mentioned, Markel Fultz, so I'm going to add that in. And also that I'm back into the hills on Facebook, Twitter, and anybody who comes at any sort of slander for Markel. So I'm glad you gave Markel some love there, Hank. So
yeah, he's a great guy, too. I mean, our fans who are rough on him, I mean, I get it. Fans want their team to win. When you don't get wins, some fans are going to blame player, a coach, whatever. Everybody around the league would love to have Coach Mosley as their coach, but we still have fans who call him an idiot and everything else if we lose two games in a row. And it's hard to read some of that on Facebook and the Facebook fan group, et cetera. But they're rough on Markel. But Markel is very important. The coaches know how good he is. More than that, the players know how much he's worked to overcome the injury issues that he's had. And when we had the game where he had the 2 3-pointers a week or so ago at home, you'd never see. I mean, the other players looked like, you know, their kid had just scored in the game. They were so happy. Everybody's super happy for him when he succeeds. They know the effort that he's in. He's also a good leader especially for the guards, but for the whole team. So Markel's a great guy and a very good player. I would love to see him stay here, but if he does leave and go somewhere else, I'll definitely still be a fan of his.
I just want to get that extension done myself. But anyway, so obviously being on the floor, you've alluded to it, and having such great view of, you know, what's happening at the Kia Center. Are there any standout moments for you at home this season? And also then, just to add on to that, how good was that atmosphere on Sunday? Was it as good as, you know, the Raptor series in 2019?
I think it was. I think Sunday was amazing, especially once we got into the second quarter. The team started playing better and, you know, raced the lead that Milwaukee had. And the key moment for me in that game is when Cole stole the ball and went in for the dunk. Jalen Suggs was standing right beside me by the time Cole was going that court, and he jumped so high when Cole was dunking the ball that I could see Cole dunk the ball underneath Jalen as he was jumping in the air. And to see that excitement and, you know, how happy the players are for everybody on the team, that's what stands out in my mind right now. Also, the moment I told you about a couple of weeks ago when Markel hit the second 3-pointer in the game from the corner on the other end of the court, you can hear everybody on the bench encouraging him and so happy. And I heard someone, I couldn't tell who it was, someone saying he's worked so hard for that, been working so hard on his shot. Those are the moments that stand out for me when they're really, really pulling for their teammates. Those are probably the two moments that come to mind. But in this season, there have been hundreds of moments where I'm jumping out of my seat because it's just so exciting to see the young guys and their energy and how hard they play.
Yeah, you're jumping out your seats. We're waking our families up in the middle of the night.
We have to ask you how would Sundays on the line getting the jersey from Franz Wagner as part of Fan Appreciation Night rank?
Yeah, that was very cool. That's the first time I've been involved in that. I was lucky a couple of years ago. I got a game worn jersey from Franz in a contest with the Magic. But that's the first time I've been in the jersey off their backs kind of line, and that's great because I like Franz. I like all the players, but I especially like Franz. And it was good that, you know, I had a chance to just kind of talk to him while we're waiting on everybody else doing their jerseys. And it's cool that the players do things like that. They earlier in the year, we have an auction wine festival event to raise money for youth foundations in the area, the Orlando Magic Youth Foundation auction. And every single player showed up for that event. And they're all available to the fans. They, you know, they talked to anybody who came up to them, took pictures with everybody. They really are they're just a great group of guys.
Yeah,
so any chance to have a moment with them is I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that comes across from what we see on the TV here. But I'd love to hear about your road trips this season, because personally, I've only experienced seeing the Magic in Orlando. I've seen Team USA over here, and I've seen a couple of the London and Manchester NBA games that we've had. But talk to us about life on the road as a Magic fan. I think I'm the exception to the rule amongst the Let's Talk Magic guys as to having only seen the Magic in Orlando. But for yourself, Hank, you've travelled all over, including Phoenix this year, where J.I. absolutely shut KD down, I think.
He did. Unfortunately, we didn't come back and win that game, but we were right there with those guys.
Yeah.
I love going to the road games. This is the first year where I've been to multiple road games. I usually go to two or three, but this is the first year where I think I've been to 24 or 25 road games this year.
Wow.
And it's amazing. I try to stay in the same hotel with the team because then you get a little bit more, get to know the players a little better, more interaction with them and the coaches. But being at the games, I like to be at the road games so the players know there's somebody there cheering for them, because I can be pretty loud, and I like for them to know that, you know, they're in a hostile environment, but it's not totally hostile. What's been surprising to me is that the fans in the other arenas are great. I mean, there might be a little bit of, you know, teasing and talking about, being for the other team there. But by the end of the game, I basically made friends with everybody around me at almost every game. I mean, there's some where the people are just quiet, but for the most part, you know, they want to know, what do you think about your team and how good they're getting, how young they are. And they're just really, it's been very enjoyable to be on the road game, be at the road games, be around fans from the other teams, and see the way the team plays in what are sometimes hostile environments. I've enjoyed it a great deal. I would like to be able to do it again next year. I don't know if I'll have the freedom of schedule to be able to go to quite as many games, but it's been a great experience.
I'll second what Hank said there. I mean, I've been to New York, Brooklyn, and Miami, and you have a bit of banter with the opposing fans. I say we're the opposing fans, but, you know, the other team. But at the end of the day, you know, you get a, you know, good game Orlando, and then everybody gets out on their way and has a beer. So it's all happy days. Nothing like the UK.
No, I've heard about the soccer
game. Oh, yeah. Very, very tribal. Very tribal.
Yeah. If let's put it this way, if the four of us all support different teams, and there is no hope of us ever sitting together at a game for any of our teams.
Yeah,
just wouldn't happen.
I was telling you about before we went on the call, my friend Fox, that's the big Man City fan, he was explaining he went to Man City and Arsenal a few years ago, and he's like, literally all the Man City fans are in one section.
Yeah,
and the Arsenal fans are in another section, and there's a row of police between the sections.
That is correct.
And you wouldn't want to go over there with their fans, and they don't, you know. It was just totally. He loved it. He thought it was thrilling, but sounds totally different than what we experience here.
Hank, let me just tell you, as a football fan, I have experienced the home fan, I have experienced the away fan, and as a police officer for 30 years, I've also experienced standing in between the two lots of them. It's a different experience.
It does sound exciting, but yeah, I like getting to talk to the fans around me and not being worried about them
Oh, God, yeah. Give us the American atmosphere at a basketball, as far as I'm concerned, any day.
Yep.
Yeah, there's not many pinky fingers in the air and cups of tea getting down with football crowds. I'll throw that in. Hank, you've seen
a
lot.
Let me go back real quick to an early question. I think I left out Wendell Carter when I was talking about the players that I really like. He's great. Great guy. Great player. Underrated. Probably our most underrated player. Like I said, Franz, I don't think people know what a star he's going to be, but I think people don't give Wendell enough credit either. I think he is the best interior screener in the entire league. And he's a reason, if you watch when Franz drives to the basket, when Wendell's in the game, he basically just follows Wendell and Wendell clears the path for him without committing an offensive foul. And I don't think a lot of people really see that. They look at the box score at the end of the game and maybe have 12 points, 7 rebounds, but he doesn't get credit for an assist, but he's probably contributed to 10 to 12 other baskets in the game just by his screening, his smart plays. He's a really, really big part of the team.
You're giving a lot
really
of love.
Nice guy for a former Duke player.
You love Duke, don't you?
Yeah. Actually, I got a jersey from Paolo last year in like a private meeting, and he said something to me about, because I wear North Carolina shirts to most of the home games. He said, "Why don't you ever wear a Duke shirt?" And I said, "Well, I went to Duke, and I didn't like Duke when I was there." And he was shocked that I was a Duke, that I went to Duke, but loved North Carolina. But yeah, it's always, ever since I was a kid, I was taught by family, North Carolina good, Duke bad.
I've actually been to Chapel Hill, Hank.
Chapel Hill is a beautiful place.
It is. It is. It's lovely. It's a nice campus. It's a really nice campus. You've mentioned a lot of players who you like on this team, but if you think of your Magic fandom, what would be your all-time favorite Magic Five?
I'm going to go with what I think is the best.
Okay.
And it's going to go back to before I was really a fan specifically of the Magic. But like I said, I've always been a basketball fan since I was, probably 7 or 8 years old. I've watched a lot of basketball. I think the five, for me, the all-time team is Shaq, Penny Hardaway, Tracy McGrady, Nick Anderson, and then I kind of have a wild card in there. I think J.J. Redick doesn't get the love that he deserved as a Magic player. He was really important.
You're picking another Dookie there, Hank.
I know it. I'll be honest with you. The very first year I was a season ticket holder there, I was in the very last seat in the first row of the Ultimate, and Otis Smith was the general manager at the time. Yeah. And he would stand beside me during the games. And after 6 or 7 games, we'd talk a lot during the game. And I told him, so I'm a huge North Carolina fan. My grandmother was a much bigger UNC fan, I believe. She was all UNC, didn't like anybody else. And she particularly did not like J.J. Redick when he was at Duke. I mean, really a lovely woman, but really did not like J.J. Redick. And so I told Otis, I was like, "And you get me a UNC player to cheer for, I'm starting to cheer for J.J. Redick. And if my grandma finds out I'm pulling for J.J. Redick, he's probably not going to talk to me anymore." And he went on about 10 minutes telling me how amazing a person and a player J.J. Redick was and how hard he worked, not just in the game, because if you ever watch him in the game, he's constant movement. He's just running around the whole time on offense trying to get free from his defender. And he probably expended more energy than anybody I've ever seen play basketball. But he said he's that way in practice too. He's encouraging all the other players. He's holding everybody to a higher standard. So Otis Smith loved him, and I learned to very much appreciate him as a player. So that would be my top five all-time Magic players. There are a lot of others that could be on the list, and I purposely left off all the current players because I don't want to name one or two of them and leave the others off.
That's fair enough.
Right, so the last one before we let you let you go, because I know you've got to go and watch the Boston Red Sox this afternoon.
We're gonna skip the Red Sox tonight and go to the Bruins' last home game.
Okay.
Important game for them. If they win, they get the number one seed in their division. So.
Okay. You're talking to a Tampa Bay Lightning fan here, by the way. So we might see you next week.
I am a Tampa Bay Lightning fan as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's okay then. That's okay. So obviously we're all excited to see the Magic this postseason against the Cavaliers starting next weekend. We spoke about this a little bit off air before we came on, and you've got a ticket for the game on Saturday. But can we get a prediction from you, including who you think is going to raise their game for the Magic, you know, on the big stage?
Well, I think we're going to win that series in six games. So I think we'll win it at home in game six. I think Jalen Suggs is going to be huge, controlling Donovan Mitchell, and also going to be a bigger offensive contributor than he has been in some games during the regular season. And I think Franz is going to have a couple of 30-point games in the series and also be a huge factor. And, of course, I think Cole's going to be big in every game, just like I think throughout the year. So I'm excited. I think we win the series. Like I said, I think it probably goes six games. And then hopefully we get to face Boston and see what we can do against them.
Absolutely. We might have to get you back on if we've got the Celtics. You can give us a bit of insight on Boston. That'd be great. Thank you ever so much, Hank, for joining us this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure. So we'll let you get on with your day. And good luck to the Bruins tonight. Thank you ever so much.
I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Hank.
Take care.
Amazing to meet you.
Right, that was absolutely brilliant with Hank. So thank you ever so much for coming on, Hank. So let's just take a quick break to tell you about today's partner. If you're looking for tickets and hotels for the world's best theme parks and attraction tickets, please check out Attraction Tickets. They are the UK's number one attraction ticket provider for Walt Disney World, Universal Studios, SeaWorld, Disneyland Paris, and other popular attractions. Attraction Tickets do sell Orlando Magic tickets at hugely competitive prices, but please bear in mind you'll have to wait till next season now for them to get the allotment for the season. You can also check out our website, letstalkmagic.com, for all our affiliate links and discount codes, including the NBA store and Fanatics UK. Right, so following our last episode, the Magic played twice, having the opportunity, as we discussed, to win to get into the playoffs. So the first opportunity arose on Friday night against the Philadelphia 76ers on the road. We're not going to go into too much detail here because it's a little bit irrelevant and we're in, so it's fine. We weren't very happy. We weren't very happy after this game. So, Paul, quick reaction, please, to the game. And the floor is yours if we want to resurrect the old ref rant.
Right. At the point where I started watching the game, I didn't know Gary had watched it live. I knew you had. I knew you were finished. I knew you'd watched it. I knew Mikey was at work. So I thought I messaged you. I very nearly stayed up to watch the game and chose not to. And I am especially pleased that I didn't, because I would not have slept. I'm sorry. It took me 4 minutes of play to be messaging you. I won't use the phrasing that I was using in those messages.
No, it's a family show.
Shall I say that I expressed a disgruntled opinion about the state of officiating?
Yeah.
What was it? Two quick fouls by Lillard's on Embiid as he flailed around in the first minute of the game, I think it was.
22 seconds?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, for such a big guy, it's embarrassing how he falls over so much. The officiating, I thought, was awful. Absolutely awful. And it was
Can I add one thing? I saw the officials, didn't I? About six hours before the game tip-off. I messaged you boys and I said, no way we're winning. We're not winning this one.
And that performance, their performance was typified by the outcome of that challenge, challenge. I still don't understand what they actually decided, but it wasn't a correct decision, whatever they came up with, because they did they overturn it? I genuinely don't understand.
Inadvertent whistle, I think.
Yeah, it was such a rubbish decision. It was absolute cop-out. And I'll be talking about the game itself. Once we got back into it, yeah, Tyrese Maxey hit them seven straight points to put them away. But you've got to say the officials had part of that as well, because if they'd actually blown for moving screens that they just didn't seem to be doing for against Philadelphia, it would have been a different score. He would not have got a percentage of those points. It annoyed me, to say the least, because we fought in that game and we just weren't allowed to play D. We just weren't allowed to play it.
And
it was completely different to what in the week we had seen from the commissioner, Adam Silver, saying about how the game was being called. And I sent you that article, G, didn't I, that had been...
It is.
This interview had been done with him where he was saying, we're calling the game a lot tighter, we're not letting the ticky-tacky fouls. And, well, what have I just watched? Because that was completely... Ways. It was absolutely awful.
Yeah.
But who cares? Weird.
Absolutely. But half-time... Gary and I both stayed up, see? So we were messaging each other. Other than that, the last 50 seconds of the first half, you know, we had the momentum. It looked good. And B did, you know, hopefully he's okay. Had gone out injured. And you thought, hang on, this is one we could take. And like you said, especially in the fourth quarter, you know, we made a rally. Unfortunately, Philadelphia answered with a little assistance. But yeah, at least we're in. Right then. So anything to add to that, Gar?
I thought we were going to win.
Yeah, I did.
I genuinely thought we were going to win that game. But I also think, like, refereeing aside, there was that level of three-point shooting where I was like, it was just like the ocean at times, at the wrong times for it. And it was kind of like a thing where I think we needed some more of the defensive intensity, and you could say, were we allowed it or not, but we needed that defensive break and a bit of what we got in the second half versus the Bucks. And Philly seemed to be able to just open that gap up whenever they needed. And there was that. And let's be honest, without Philadelphia, if it wasn't for the Embiid injury, they wouldn't be in the play-in.
No, no.
There's no way. They'd be home court.
100%.
Yeah.
No, I'll be honest, I think they'd be second. If Philly hadn't had those injuries, I think Philly would have been second.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, they booked their arena for Tuesday night, so they couldn't have the playing game on Tuesdays. They got to have theirs on Wednesday, apparently. So, yeah, there's the confidence level there. Anyway, moving on. So, following the loss, the Magic had an opportunity to finish fifth with a win against Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday night. We've touched upon it already. So we had a bit of a shaky first quarter where the Magic trailed, but then we saw an absolute masterclass in defense, starting at, you know, defensive end, which lasted from midway through the second quarter all the way through the fourth, as we built a 25-point lead on a Joe Ingles three. And the roof lifted in my house, and I'm sure it was the same with you guys as well. As Milwaukee pulled their starters and, you know, almost conceded the game to us. So, Gary, just give us what your thoughts were on the performance, and especially Mr. Jonathan Isaac.
It was the best of the Orlando Magic from really, I think, from the start, but from the second quarter, definitely the team that was on the winning streak earlier in the season, the team that's put away some top teams this season, the team that's at times swatted away some inferior teams in terms of this season, what you would call the inferior teams anyway, the non-playoff or play-in teams. It was the best of the Magic. It was great to see us getting back to that one possession basketball. And basically, if you don't score, you're not going to get another chance to score. There was an element of that in the second half as well, which is what we do very, very well. Jonathan Isaac, there was a confidence. I think when GI was starting, I'm not disrespecting anyone else here, but I was kind of like, this means business, this lineup. You've made the call. Mikey was saying the other morning as well, where Wendell said, keep him in. But yeah. GI was just immense in that. Like, I watched that game with my dad, and my dad's like, likes the Magic, but he's not a huge basketball fan. But he likes basketball. And he just sat there and he was like, Jonathan Isaac's immense. He was just like this this guy is like absolutely unbelievable. He was calling him like Inspector Gadget Arms and stuff like that.
Your dad's mentioned that before, though, that Jonathan Isaac is the best player we've got. You've mentioned that on a previous podcast.
Yeah, he thinks he's unbelievable. Whenever GI was coming into the game, he just was like, they've got a problem now. You know, and it felt like when we got in the second half and the game was starting to pull away, that Milwaukee didn't really know what to do. And I think that's a testament to what Jonathan Isaac was doing and what he did with, like, for example, when he guarded Lillard. But I also think, I mean, Mikey chatted on the phone on Monday morning, and I was like, that's the Gary Harris on the defensive end that we need to see. He didn't have a great game offensively. And there's times where I'll say that I think Gary Harris could offer more at times than what he sometimes does. And I've been quite open with that. And some people like it, some people won't. That was the defensive end, what Gary Harris could bring to that game, because Jalen Suggs did it. All the team did it. But Gary Harris on the perimeter was massively effective, to, in my opinion, to the same levels of what Jalen Suggs almost hits, or the levels almost Jalen Suggs-esque levels. Harris was, when we traded for him at Denver, his calling card was defense. Denver used to talk him up as an all-defense level player, you know, like, should he get in the all-defense teams? And I felt we saw some, like, vintage-level Gary Harris defensively against the Bucks. He was up for it. And we're going to need that. We're going to need that against Cleveland's backcourt. We are really going to need that. So it wasn't just a shout-out to Jonathan Isaac, but I think if we're talking about defensive shout-outs, Isaac and Suggs are the obvious two. I think Gary Harris is another one, and I think that's the best we've seen from Wendell for quite some time when he came off the bench. Stats wouldn't tell you that, but what he did do when he was on the floor was absolutely huge, and probably that's where we'll see Wendell in the playoffs, where in the first round he's probably going to be coming off the bench. But if he does and he does that, he's going to be highly effective.
Yeah. When, earlier in the season, though, when Wendell came back and was coming from the bench, as he came back from that second injury, he was so effective coming off the bench. I really liked seeing him come from the bench. And I think if he can, and I understand why people will want to be a starter, will want to be a finisher. Mm-hmm. But if you look at what you need a strong bench to continue putting pressure on teams when the stars, so as people will refer to it, are off court. You need a complete team. You can't rely on 3-4 players. You have to have a solid group of players that you can call on. And I think Wendell can be a massive player for us from the bench, because to have that quality player coming from the bench is something that few teams have.
But he's going to probably have to be, because when you look at impact on a game, you've only got to watch the game to realise that the impact that Jonathan Isaac has is an all-star level impact on the game. You know, he's a different type of player, but it's similar to he's a better defender than the guy I'm going to say, but Rudy Gobert's been a multiple all-star based on the defensive end. And I would say Jonathan Isaac's a better defender than Rudy Gobert. And that's a statement, but it's a statement I believe in, because GI can go outside. And God, Gobert's problem has been getting torched on the air, on the outside by people. Yeah. And GI can do that as well. So if you're talking about our best players being on the floor, Wendell might have to think that guy's going to be out there. And it seems like he actually does think that when he's told Mosley, let him cook, let him stay in.
Yeah. So then, with the playoff opponent set after that set of games on Sunday, which was very good, actually, the way the NBA did it, all the games starting at the same time, you know, the Magic of facing the Cleveland Cavaliers in the 4-5 matchup. So I thought we'd have a quick look at the Cavs in preparation for this weekend. Obviously, the schedule hasn't been determined as yet, other than the fact we're playing on Saturday. If I was a betting man looking at the other teams playing, two West Coast games, etc., I'd have thought we'd have been the first game, but we shall see. So we've obviously played Cleveland four times this season. So I just thought I'd quickly recap what's happened. The series did end 2-2. So the first game was in Cleveland, where we lost 121 to 111. Now, that was the game that Banchero went crazy and got 42 points. Game two was at home, where we won 104 to 94. We're at a 30 to 15 third quarter, catapulted Orlando to a win. Game three was a home loss, quite a significant loss, actually, by a score of 126 to 99, with Sam Merrill going a little bit crazy from downtown. I can't remember how many. He must have scored about 25, 26. I've got it in my notes here. But obviously, Cleveland jumped on us early and were leading 38 to 19 in the first quarter. So they really set the stall out. And then the fourth game was a game that Donovan Mitchell didn't play, where we beat them in Cleveland by a score of 116 to 109. With the Wagner boys notching 36 between them, Mo with 22, Franz 14, as we pulled away in the fourth quarter. So I've just picked up two kind of key matchups I think will be pivotal in this series. Jalen Suggs against Donovan Mitchell. You know, obviously limiting Mitchell is going to be absolutely key for the Magic's defense. Stopping the Cavs' offense. How do you see this one playing out, Paul?
Absolutely crucial, isn't it, mate? You're not wrong. Slowing Mitchell down is essential. We need Jalen to be available every game, and we need him to be available for every moment that he can be against Donovan Mitchell, without a doubt. Jalen is a much improved defender this season. He's learned from his mistakes. He's now elite, and I do think we will see him in the NBA All-Defensive Team this time. Looking at Donovan Mitchell, just quickly, 44 career playoff games, averaging 27.8 points per game. Last season for the Cavs in the games against New York, he averaged 23.2. Now, that's significantly down on where he would normally be. There are still questions I'm seeing from people as to whether his heart's in it with Cleveland. Personally, I don't buy into that idea. I think we will see his full effort. So you've got to plan for him properly. Against the Magic this season, he has averaged 27.3 points per game and 7.3 assists. You have to remember, though, that 35 of those points in one game came when Jalen was out. And in that game, he faced Gary Harris and Anthony Black as the main defensive opponent. Against Jalen, in six games against Jalen, he's averaged 28.3 points per game and 5.7 assists. So fairly decent stats. But this season, that number is down against Jalen. Where Jalen's been the primary defender, 25 points in 15 minutes faced up directly against Jalen. And he's turned the ball over an awful lot when he's been had Jalen in his face. So huge matchup. First point, though, is for me, we have to see how the officials are going to call it. And that goes to how much Jalen's going to be available for us. If we see that soft stance again that we saw against Philly from the officials, where the slightest brush is called as a foul, then you are going to be looking at Jalen not being on the court as much. And somebody who is an 86.5% free throw shooter on the season could get a lot of opportunities from the line. But because if they are calling it soft like that, he's going to get an awful lot of open looks because of how easy it's going to be for getting a shot. 18 of 22 in three appearances against the Magic this year on free throws. So it's not the best limiting him because he's that's above the number that he's got per game this season. Jalen is sensational ball pressure for me. He'll work tirelessly, trying to keep in that position. He's going to be fighting through a lot of, I would guess, Jarrett Allen screens. which is what we saw earlier in the season. And that's how they're going to try. I would guess that's how they're going to try and create Donovan Mitchell some space. They can just either do a little step back here and there, or that the screen creates him that opportunity. Jalen probably can't afford to give him too much space. He's going to have to defend him out on the perimeter because of his three-point ability. Shooting 37%, just shy of 37% from deep this season. So I think we're going to see also perimeter defence from Jalen. And interior-wise, he's probably going to have to accept that there's going to be, he may not be getting back as much. There may be some help from the likes of your J.I. or Gary Harris, as has already been mentioned. And we saw what a job J.I. can do on that smaller guard when he played against Dame on Sunday. Discipline and focus, mate. Pick and roll. He's going to be facing a lot of the pick and roll. That could be key. If they can get, if we don't cover that right, he's going to kill us. But Jalen is huge. Jalen has to keep out of foul trouble and keep on the court.
Yeah. Just sort of flipping this on his head, because obviously we've seen the Magic play the Cavs in years gone by, where we kind of, I'm thinking back to, I think it's 08, 09 now, Gah, where we just let LeBron have whatever he wanted. Yeah. And then we just played defense on, you know, everybody else. LeBron, you know, tired out, etc. So you let that player beat you, but make sure that none of the others contribute.
There's always that tactic, question. Do you let somebody have what they want? Do you live with what one player can give you and defend against the others? And most of the season, we have gone the way of try and limit their main player whilst also not overreacting and then allowing somebody else to be able to go off on you. Most of the season, the Magic have tried defending in that way. I'd be very surprised if we see anything really that much different come the playoffs. Yeah. But yeah, it is a very, very valid point, mate, and one which a lot of teams will do. And surely, as I've sent it through today, we all know that previous playoff matchup against LeBron was only because Rashard and Hedo were juiced up, as somebody had put it, one of the Cavs fans.
Oh, deluded Cavalier fans. There you go.
You know, they'll be burning shirts against them.
Oh, yeah, they will be. So the next point I had, so Gary, I'll come to you. The bench. Magic bench has obviously got the team back into games many times this season, and they'll need to continue to do that, you know, with a great play. But obviously, if J.I. is potentially starting after the impressive showing on Sunday against the Bucks, can you see the Magic bench out-dueling the Cavalier reserves?
Well, we saw on Sunday what the Magic bench can do. We saw the first half, what Mo Wagner did. I think he'll be pretty amped up for this. And the second half, we saw what Cole Anthony can do. And we saw Joe Ingles' leadership. We saw Wendell, etc. I think the Magic bench is still going to be effective if it's tweaked around that way. I think Cleveland's got a dangerous bench because, just a quick glance, it's a case of maybe if they've got all five players fit, does Caris LeVert come off the bench for the Cavs, or does Max Strus come off the bench for the Cavs? Either way, when you look at the starting lineup, one of those two guys, I've seen the games, I've seen the Cavs this season, LeVert's come off the bench. He's an effective sixth man. He's a guy who can take a game away from you. He can score in bunches. He can put up big numbers one night. That could take a game or two in a series, so it's a worry. You look at the guys like George Nyang, Isaac Okoro. We've seen what Sam Merrill did to us. We know what they can do and what they have on their bench, but we've got to have confidence in our own bench as well. So can we match Cleveland's bench? Yes. The bench is going to be vital. It has been massive, and we get huge contributions offensively in particular from Mo Wagner and Cole Anthony, but we have other players on there who can impact games. I think if we see a series where Mo and Cole have been efficiently strong on the offensive end, we've probably won it.
Yeah.
So,
No, no, that's cool. That's cool. Right. So, what other factors now? So, I ask you both. Do you deem important for Orlando to win this series? You know, that could be stopping a particular player, rebounding, 3-point shooting, touch upon defense. Well, or all of the above.
Yeah, right. If you're picking one particular thing, it's for me, it would be defending the pick and roll that they play so well. I think that defending that is going to be huge. If we can properly manage their ability on the pick and roll, then we can be in with a very, very good chance in this series.
Yeah. Gah?
I'm going to say two things, which I'm going to put them under an umbrella of fundamentals. But we'll say the umbrella of fundamentals is turnovers. So limiting our turnovers and free throw shooting. I think if we're getting good free throw shooting stats, particularly from Paolo, that's going to take its own story, because there's been times where we've lost games, I think, on free throws, but even more when we've had bad starts or where we've been under pressure as a young team, it's been through erratic ball handling and turnovers. So one of my concerns is how we react to the atmosphere in Cleveland, but also how we react to the expectation in Orlando as a young team with the turnovers. So I'm going to say it. Fundamentals, turnovers, and free throws.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good point, Gary, managing the atmosphere. As a young team, that's a very good point, mate.
I mean, between the three of us, we're going to pick up on all the parts, because rebounding, I thought, would be key. Obviously, you know, you're going up against Jarrett Allen, you're going up against Evan Mobley. And if we play J.I., you know, J.I.'s long, but obviously they're big-bodied guys, aren't they? So you really need to control the glass. So you don't want to get beat up on the boards. Obviously limiting their 3-point shooting, and for us to shoot well as well. We've seen it done, you know, on the road against Sacramento. You set a new franchise record. So, yeah, it's between a lot of everything, really, isn't it? Just play well, execute the plan, and don't let the, what's the word? The occasion put you off. So, right, so last one. No, actually, I've got two more questions for you. Sorry, guys. So which player needs to be the X factor in the series for Orlando? Gary?
I could give an obvious answer, but I'm not going to give the totally obvious answer. I'm going to say Franz Wagner, because I think if Franz can put up, I could average, say, 20, 22, 23 points per game efficiently, hopefully without any really horrendous 3-point shooting. If Wagner's doing that, I would suggest Paolo will probably get his anyway. So I think it's, if we can be getting the types of numbers that we got from Paolo and Franz in the Milwaukee game, if we can be getting somewhere around that where they're combining for 55, 56, 60 points, it's probably looking pretty good for the Magic. I've been critical before where I've said Paolo needs somebody else to go in the phone box with him. So in an ideal world, that person would be Franz Wagner.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to go with the bench, somebody off the bench.
Okay.
We've already spoke about Suggs. We've already spoke about J.I. We've already spoke about Paolo there, as Gary's just done very quickly, and Franz. So you're only left with one other starter there, but I'm going to go with somebody off the bench, and I'm going to say that Mo Wagner could be huge for us. Those 15 minutes that he comes on and plays are a key period of time, and if he's locked in, he can be a very, very effective scorer. We all know that he can get under other players' skins. He can be that player who is a catalyst for us starting to, if we're behind, for us starting to pick up, for us starting to have some energy. So yeah, I'm going Mo Wagner.
Cool. I'm going to stick with Paolo. Paolo needs to be, he's on the stage now. He's on national television. There's only one game on.
Yep.
Obviously, we only had the Oklahoma game, really, where, you know, all the eyes were on him. And, you know, we didn't get the best game out of him. So, for me, he's got to really show up now, you know, and he has, and especially the last game, and we've seen it in the last week. But I really want to see Paolo, you know, just sort of show everybody why he's an all-NBA. You know, what we read up today, you know, Kendrick Perkins putting him in the All-NBA third team, just really trying to cement that. So I'm going to go with Paolo, but obviously, like what you guys said, he's going to need a little help from his friends, and they're great shouts. And you need a good series for, you know, your Jonathan Isaacs, your Jalen Suggs, your Mo Wagners, your Cole Anthony's, everybody. So yeah, let's go with Paolo. So last one. Quick series predictions. Gary?
I think
can I just say... Oh, right, okay. I was going to say we're all going to say the same, yeah, but...
It'll go seven games.
Okay.
That's the prediction.
To whom?
I don't know. It's the truth. I think it's close. I think I've been astounded by the non-Orlando/Cleveland social media reaction about it being like a bum series that nobody wanted to watch. If I was in neutral and the Magic weren't in the playoffs, and let's just say there was another young team like Indiana Cleveland as a first round, I'd be like, I want to watch that. It's two up and coming teams. It's a heart and head thing. I would have to say the momentum of the series. Right now, I would say my heart's obviously saying Orlando at four, but I don't know. I could see maybe an experience being our downfall, if I'm being brutally honest. I think we're going to have a big ask, but if we take it this, if it's seven games, it's any one series. But right now I'd be saying experience counts. I don't buy this Donovan Mitchell rubbish about he's not into it. I don't buy that one little bit.
Cool. Well,
looking at this point, I'm saying 4-2 to Cleveland. I think experience. You look at we've already mentioned about managing the atmosphere, playing the game as opposed to the occasion. We don't know how we're going to do. We don't know how we're going to react to that yet. I think they'll actually do well. And I'll be honest with you. I think if we lose 4-2 and we're competitive in those games, I don't see it being an awful result. I'm not rooting for that. That's not what I'm saying. I think we're very capable of taking it 4-1. I'll be honest with you. I do think we can take them. I do think we can take them. But it's a flip of the coin at this moment in time, and with experience being very, very much in their favour, and you've got to kind of expect that there's going to be, they're not going to want to go out for a second year to a bum team as a fancy team in the first round. You've got to expect that they're going to come out swinging. So at this moment in time, 4-2. Then.
I'm sticking. I had the same thing as Hank. And when Hank said Magic in six, I saw Paul sort of nod and I thought, oh, he's gone Magic in six too.
Mate, ask me tomorrow and I'll have a different answer.
Yeah. No, I'm going ass. Back our guys. I get what you're saying about the, you know, inexperience, etc. But why not us? Why not? So, no, there's time for growth. I think we can maintain home court. Nick won, you know, even if it's lose the first two, win the two at home, Nick game five, and then have a chance to close out on the road. No, at home. Hang on, I got this all wrong.
I'll tell you what, G.
Win game three and four, and 5 and 6. So go down 2-0 and win the next 4. That's where I'm going with. 4-2 Orlando.
If we can win one of those first two, then that is absolutely huge.
Yeah.
Because yeah. When we played in 2019 and won the first game in Toronto, I think Toronto were a better team.
Yeah.
Than this Cleveland team are. I also think that 2019 Magic team wasn't as good as this team is that we currently have. Absolutely. In Orlando. So I think if we nick one of them first two games, that is absolutely huge. And at that point, they're gonna have to. We talk about, as I say, we've spoken about it several times, but they're gonna have to manage the atmosphere when they come to play mm-hmm. in Orlando because it will be loud.
Yeah, I saw a clip played from 2019 of Nick Nurse and Pascal Siakam talking about the Magic Raptor series, and there was one timeout they said we couldn't hear the coach. We literally just said, "All right, let's just go with it."
Tell you what, boys, if we took game two in Cleveland, game two in particular, I think that would have a major impact.
Yeah,
because game two you're actually lost, and then you've got to go to Orlando. And I think the pressure would ramp up even more than if we took game one.
Yeah. I think game one is more one of them games where it's like opening day of the season, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Whereas game two is, right, we're into this now. We're into this season. We're into the series. And you've made adjustments. You've learned and you've come out and got a different result. Game two has a lot of impact.
It does. So then, I think that's going to do it for this week. So thank you for listening and watching. Before we go, we just want to say a big thank you to our patrons who help support the show. So thank you for your incredible support to Barry Conn, Paolo and Franz Warmth, Ollie Law, Gary Clark, Angus Craig, Dylan Holden, Alan Kane, Tom Soane, Mark Joss, Sean Moore, Liam Radbourne, Andy Lindley, Stuart Benzies, Drum Drum, Drummy Drum Drum, and Podfather Phil Loves Hazy Northwestern. I love that. If you're interested in joining our Patreon, we have 3 tiers available with varying benefits. Please visit patreon.com/letstalkmagic to join today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give it a thumbs up, leave us your thoughts, questions, and don't forget to subscribe. From looking at the stats, I know that only about 30% of our listeners subscribe. So if you could do us a massive favor and take some time to subscribe to our channel, that would help us out incredibly. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and X, all at _letstalkmagic. So from Paul, Gary, and myself, until next week, go Magic.